for Signature Homes and City to Surf Solar, the fifth quarter.
I haven't been out there, Neildy. You sadly played in a losing prelim, Neildy, in early 90s. Yep, and Shawnee's been out there as well. I would imagine, I mean, you can tell the hurt in that. Losing a prelim is almost, you know, I was just trying to take myself in the rooms. You're thinking, wow, we've got to do all that pre-season again to get back to this point to give us a chance to go to the big dance. I mean, I'm sure when you lose a grand final, it's worse, but the prelim final seems to me to be almost the most painful.
Look, it certainly can be. Losing finals is never, losing knockout finals is a horrible feeling, and it's different for everybody involved. Like supporters, and quite rightly, the supporters are, you know, ringing in, and there was a good balance, I thought, to what Tom was reading out, and they're saying they're disappointed. I can guarantee you there are no more disappointed people than the players and the coaching group and the staff that put everything into it. People talk about, you know, living their lives through footy. Now, it is actually their life right now. So we are all very disappointed and just to different levels and in different ways. And whether or not, look, I don't believe in the thing that says, you know, it burns in your belly. Like, you know, that's six, whenever the next season starts, it's 6 months away.
Yeah.
The players will, all the adrenaline goes, you're disappointed. And even young Liam Baker was saying, I know he's a young player, but he said for the last month he's been thinking about the opportunity to play on grand final day, and that's been taken away. At least from the Cats' point of view, Chuck, they will know that they got beaten by a better side. Richmond were amazing, and Sean pointed out before that, I think, what did you say, they've won 11 on end.
11, their biggest 11 winning streak since 1980.
And that, their team is amazing. You know, they were, whatever they've done, they were ninth on the ladder after round 14. They get their players back and they start playing footy like that. And, you know, Geelong to be 21 points in front at half time and have the run of the game and be doing everything so well, that's full credit to them. You know, they got beaten by a better side. They'll be really disappointed for that. And AFL footy is a very, very big business. You know, tomorrow morning, probably, Chris Scott and his team will be sitting down to analyse every single minute of this game, and they'll look back over the season and try and work out where the holes are and which players they think can get better and fill those gaps and which players they need to go and see if they can trade for. That's the way it is.
Fifth quarter, thanks to Signature Homes and City to Surf Solar. I believe we had some more calls. Matty, you might need to give me some names down the line. Jared has been waiting patiently.
Thanks for waiting, Jared.
Thanks for your call.
You there still, Jared?
All right, we'll move on to Twiggy. Twiggy, thanks for your call.
Yeah, go, lads. Apologies, there's not much voice left. I gave it all pretty early on that one, but, I don't know what to say after that. There's so much optimism at half-time. We actually started really, really jeepersly well. And, what happened after half-time? It's just, yeah.
Tigers kicked 5 goals, Sean, in that third quarter to 1 goal. Henderson got right on the siren.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of summing up what happened beyond half-time, Geelong gave everything they could in that first half. And as Cam said, they really felt like the momentum and controlling the game was exactly the way that they prepared and had hoped for. But unfortunately, we've said it before, and I'll say it again, they came up against a side who, look, is arguably the best side of the last 3 years, really. They were unlucky last year, and now they've backed it up and proven it again this year that they'll be hard to beat again next week. And a bit of pill to swallow at the moment for Geelong supporters, but I think still a really positive year on the back of the way they went about it, and particularly how young most of their list is.
I'll go to get to Joe.
Joe? Hello, Joe.
Good call, boys.
Thanks, Joe.
A bit disappointing, but it was a good year. But I want to... the team tried very hard. The third and fourth quarter, when Geelong was starting... Richmond was starting to get on top, we'd like to see the smooth-talking coach try hard as well. He did not make any moves. If he had made moves, at least the fans could have said, well, the poor guy, the coach, tried this and tried that. He tried nothing. So if he gets criticised, he deserves every bit of it.
It's hard to argue with that. We talked about some moves up here in the box, and we're not in the coach's box, and we talked about the domino effect of making moves and what it impacts. You know, it's like a chessboard, isn't it, Neildy? Really, you make one move, but what are the three, four, five moves along?
I don't necessarily. We're talking about the Blitzars one. There were moves made. They were like guys like Kelly, who played the entire first half in the forward line. As soon as things started, he went on the ball. The kids who were getting a run through the middle of the ground, Parfitt and Narkle and these guys, the coaches realised when the heat was on, they couldn't do that. So the older guys went in there. I think we can acknowledge there were moves, and you'll pick up that, okay, I might defend the coaches at times, but my job is to just give a bit more of a realistic thing to what actually happens. I think what is frustrating people at the moment is it would appear that the difference between the reasons behind playing, say, a Henderson and a Blitzars and Taylor in the positions they did is clearly frustrating people. And that's what we're talking about. We can't answer that. We're only guessing as to reasons why. Chris will be asked that question in his presser, and that's okay. It's a public thing, and he will answer it. And like I said before, people will choose to criticise the answer. That's their right. Some will agree, and we just move on.
I suppose one of the issues too, Neildy, is that, and he's been such a wonderful player, but is at this stage of his career now, there's probably a lack of versatility with Harry Taylor.
Yeah.
So you move him out, he's getting beaten, but you move him out, where do you put him?
Well, right, Ben. And I think, mate, to add to that, before the game, we were talking about the forward line. I was, you know, reading some things today, listening on the radio. No one actually knew what Geelong could do without Hawkins. It was guesswork, and there's a lot of, you know, really well-credentialed people that talk about this game on radio and write articles. It was a particularly difficult move, and the one that they've come with, it didn't win the game, but gee, I don't know if anything else would have actually. Richmond were pretty good.
I think the one thing that will continue to probably gnaw away at Geelong fans is that Geelong got to the finals in a great position. They were defensively the best team. They had no injuries. And suddenly in the finals, they decided that they need to reinvent the wheel and play players in positions they hadn't played for the entire season.
I agree.
And if you're looking back on it from a coaching perspective, you've got to say that the game against Collingwood was a howler. You've got Grundy, the best ruckman in the competition. You decide not to play a ruckman, and then you've got your All-Australian defender playing in the ruck. You've got Radigalia playing in the ruck. You get to tonight, you've got Henderson, who's never played forward in the last couple of seasons, playing forward. You've got Blitzarves on the wing. When Richmond have got two gun forwards,
I'll come back and answer after we hear from our caller. Okay.
Jamie has joined us online. Jamie, thanks for your call.
Hey, boys. I'm actually going along the same lines as that. I reckon the last three or four games Geelong lost were because of selection. So, Brisbane, 29 degrees, no ruckman that can run against Stephen Martin. Is that right? Against Grundy, no ruckman. This week, we bring in a guy, and Hawkins did the wrong thing, so we understand. So they bring in a spud. Now, here's Richmond's buddy, the Henderson player. They love Hendo because he plays for them. Totals, mate, I said it on Monday to my mates, if he plays, Geelong will lose. You're better off bringing in a young guy like Wiley Buzzer who will compete and bring the ball down to people in a position. Not a spud who, as soon as the ball hits the ground, he's finished. All over, and he wouldn't get a game at Carlton.
Jamie, thank you for your call, Jamie. You made your point known there.
Look, footy's full of passion, and we love it, and we love it because of that. Ben, I think what supporters and what football clubs can expect of their coaching group and people that make decisions is they will look back. The art of being able to look back is if you didn't like it the first time and all you do is look back to relive it, the chances are you're going to dislike it even more the second time. What you need them to do is, okay, what do we learn? We're going to get this football club into a position like this into the future. How do we handle it then? And if it is that, if you're suggesting that they experimented with positions, if they've got all this information that says, right, well, we did that and it didn't work, next time we're here, we're not doing it. and how can we prepare a list that if we lose a key player and he's a forward, how do we cover that? If it's a midfielder, how do we cover that? If it's a defender, that's what you expect from your club. You don't just want them sitting there old-fashioned style, just re-watch the game and pretend that that's going to fire everyone up, and in 12 months' time they'll remember that feeling, and that's not actually you want.
You hope the coaching group are doing that.
They will do that.
The thing about it is nearly where Geelong are at. Geelong have accumulated a list over the last 4 or 5 years to be here now. They haven't accumulated a list to be any good in 3 or 4 years' time. So you're saying when they get here again, they may never get here again. It's not like golf where you lose your ball, you just tee up another one.
Yeah,
you actually got to make the right decisions when it counts, because Geelong had a magnificent opportunity to at least make a grand final as a bare minimum, and they've been bundled out.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but what do you want to happen now, though? So that's my point. What do you want them to do?
What they may learn, they may never get to put into place.
Right, okay, maybe.
Because they may not get back to here.
But hopefully, you read these names out before, so hopefully with the likes of Parford, Kolodziejczyk, Kelly, hopefully he stays, but apparently he's gone, Radaglia, Narkle, Atkins, Myers, Henry, O'Connor, that have hardly played footy at all, really. They're all in the infancy of their career. You would like to think that the experience that those guys have had, hopefully, might be able to... They might become the new core.
Do you think Gary Ablett should play on next year?
No.
Harry Taylor?
No. Lockie Henderson? No.
Scott Selwood?
No.
So do you expect those decisions to be made on those players, obviously?
There was enough evidence tonight to say, okay, this is a really good litmus test for those guys. This is as good a team going around. We've just mentioned 9 kids, young players that we think can get better. Those guys that we just mentioned, they're not getting any better. They've been superstars of the game for this club. They couldn't compete tonight. They really couldn't against the best side that's in it. They could come back and beat up on the bottom 4 teams and look great. I don't know if they're beating these guys.
Ryan's next on the line. Ryan, thank you for your call.
Oi, I'm on. Hey, how you going, guys?
Fire away, Ryan.
Yeah, I think it was one of the worst coaching games I've seen. To be up by 21 points at half-time and then to lose from there, you're playing blitz. Blitz, who is probably your best defender, and you're playing him on a wing. Why aren't you playing him down back?
It's a common theme, and it's only a question that I suspect that we'll get asked of Chris Scott in his media conference. We're not going to take that tonight, but it will be available through the Geelong website and also the AFL website. Chris will face the media a little bit later, and I'm sure that will be a question that will be raised by the numerous journos that will be loitering.
Just quickly, you guys, it's probably had Sean Comey, or it's probably not, but watching tonight's game, what's one or two areas in terms of Geelong bridging the gap on Richmond? What would they, if you're walking home tonight, Neildy, and coaching Geelong, and you're focusing in the off-season, be it player acquisition, be it the way you play the game, be it personnel, what are one or two things Geelong need to do to bridge the gap?
I agree with everything that's been said. When some things needed to change, there was a perceived lack of flexibility of some of the Geelong players that couldn't move. I agree with you, Ben, that there's not too many success stories in the history of sport when you come into finals that you can move players around and you succeed. So really, there's a ruck issue, but there's also with that, and you and I have discussed it a lot, Ben, that's a salary cap issue. Stanley is the best ruckman Geelong can afford if that's what they want to pay for one. Maybe that changes with some retirements. You'd be looking at a ruck, Ben. You'd be looking at maybe another developing young forward who would be coming through in the reserves if Radaglia or Hawkins goes down.
Kruger's kid.
That's the one. And you can never have too much speed to go through the midfield. We can see that. Richmond, have those young kids that play half forward. They whip through the middle of the ground. That'd be where you'd be going.
To his credit, he's been a whipping boy. Rhys Stanley actually played quite well tonight. He had 19 possessions. He took 4 marks. And I can tell you that the stoppages or the clearances He had 7 hit-outs to advantage. Radaglia had 5. So Richmond only had 4 hit-outs to advantage for the night. The area that Geelong...
But the 4 that they had, Benny, a couple of them, were ones that they put straight down. The one was the Tom Lynch goal in the first quarter.
Well, they kicked 3 goals. The centre clearances went 10 apiece. Richmond kicked 3 goals from those 10 clearances. Geelong kicked 1 goal, 3. Overall from stoppages, Richmond kicked 4 goals, 4. And the Cats kicked 2 goals, 6.
Probably one of the biggest things for me the Cats need to get their head around, and I'm sure they've already talked about it. If Kelly's gone, getting a first-round draft pick or a 2 first-round, that's not going to help him in the next couple of years.
No.
So he is how old is he, 23, 24? I know he's only played less than 50 games. He's a jet. And if you're thinking about competing now with these young kids, okay,
well, that's a
massive call for the Cats.
But that's
why they were
trying to get the blokes in the city to see next year. It's one of the reasons why they're getting somebody like Jack Stephen. Because they understand that their time is now. It's not in it's not in 3 years' time. It was this year. It may be next year, but after that, guys like Selwood, Hawkins.
But Geelong's also made that plan that they're a club for the moment while Brian Cook is there, that they refuse to go any. They missed the finals once. They're refusing to go down. They don't want to do what Hawthorn did and miss multiple years of finals. They'll continue to top up. That's unless there is a massive change of direction from the CEO on the board.
Stuart's joined us on the line. Stuart, thanks for holding.
Well, no worries, mate. Look, I spoke last week about our leadership issues, and I think the second quarter, we could have almost put the game away, and it probably comes back to probably during that elite period between 2007 and 2011. We had that leadership where blokes just took their opportunities when they came, and you just need someone to stand up. And I've always had the faith with Sellers, got the ball inside 45 and he's having a shot at goal. He nails it, and I just think we wasted those opportunities during that second quarter. And look, I won't even say with a bit of luck, but with a bit of quality leadership to make it counted when it was there, we'd probably go in 6 goals up at half time, and then all of a sudden Richmond have got to probably start looking at where we're winning the game from, and Geelong can go out and actually attack the game. But we missed those goals and we didn't take the chances. They get a couple and all of a sudden they go in at half time and say, let's keep playing our natural game, and Geelong started being a little bit more reactive in the third quarter. So we had our chances. It probably proves that we were good enough, but we just didn't take it when the opportunity was there.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for your call. Yeah, I think there'll be a couple of what-ifs out of that second quarter.
The leadership, my understanding is that people at the club are aware that there is a leadership void under Joel Selwood. I wonder whether, completely from left field, whether Joel steps aside as captain to try and fast-track somebody else's development next year for maybe the last 2 or 3 years of his career at Geelong, maybe just lessen the load on him. I mean, he's clearly the obvious choice as the best captain, but whether or not that actually helps promote the club, that he's there without the title but can actually assist somebody and then push through that extra tier of leadership, because he's been such a dominant leader of that team that I'm not sure anybody has followed through close behind him.
Yeah.
And I mean, you don't know that unless you're within the group, but I've heard former players say that's potentially an issue. So I wonder whether it's something that, I mean, Joel certainly wouldn't want to step down as captain, but if it's put to him that actually will fast-track somebody else's development for the future of the footy club, and he can maybe enjoy his footy, enjoy in inverted commas, without that burden of being captain the last couple of years. I don't know whether that's something that...
Who's next in
maybe
line,
the
Benny?
Cats would... Well, I don't know.
Tom Stewart probably is.
You don't know, but the thing about that is we just probably viewing that as a player. We don't know how Tom Stewart is within the group. We don't know.
Well, he's in the leadership group. He had a role with the AFLW team as an assistant coach. So they've obviously seen something there, and I suspect that AFLW role, and I don't know whether Sean, your sister, of course, Danny, plays in the AFLW team. I don't know whether she's said anything about Tom Stewart and his role and his leadership, but I suspect he's been put into those roles because when he's wanting to develop himself as a football person, and that's a way to develop your leadership as well in terms of taking a role like that. I would be shocked if Tom Stewart's not Geelong's next captain.
Well, it may be too that hypothetically Tom Stewart's the captain. Others feel then they need to push up with their leadership because it's not, well, we've got Joel. Joel's captain. Joel will do it. Joel's led from the front for the last 10 years. We'll just let him do it. Yep. Somebody else's captain, do the younger players then feel they have more responsibility to actually assist somebody like a Tom Stewart who is the captain? I mean, these are all things that potentially get discussed over summer. And he's been such an unbelievable leader of the club for so long, Joel, but he's probably been such a dominant factor or dominant figure that, you know, has it sort of stunted the development of others. And that's not his fault. That's just unfortunately just the way it is.
What's he got? 2 years left on a deal, I think. Takes him through to 33. Maybe next year's a... I don't want him to go to co-captain.
Who was the captain of Richmond before Cochran? Was it Newman?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. Mm. That was a bit of a surprise when he took over, wasn't it?
Yeah, because they had a leadership void.
Yeah.
They had a leadership void, and that was his. I think, was Kane Johnson the captain before? Yep. Yeah. So they had a massive void in leadership, and I don't think Geelong want to have that. Right now...
There will be someone there. There has to be someone there with some good leadership qualities.
I think it's Stewart. And he's respected among the group.
But there might even be some other players there that you just don't know about.
Yeah.
I would imagine Tom Stewart would be the obvious choice outside of Joel Selwood. I know nothing, obviously, in terms of internally of that club, but from my own experience and what I've seen that I've been involved in is we've always had a handover of captaincy while that captain is still playing, and yep. I think that's really beneficial to everyone's that's involved, and they can still play a significant role. And they still can be the captain without the title, no question. But the way that Brent Harvey was able to hand it over to Andrew Swallow and continue to play alongside him, and then Andrew Swallow was able to hand it to Jack Siebel while still being in the leadership group and to give him guidance and then put a new leadership group around Jack. And I'm sure when the time's right, Jack will hand it down to the next person in line. But instead of being captain, you retire. It then all goes on to Benny, who's the new captain. There is a nice way to do it in terms of not a succession plan, but giving him support and giving him a little bit of guidance and also lessen the load when he transitioned into it, because it's not only the workload outside, it's then the pressure for him to be able to perform as well.
Neil, can I ask you another question? I want to go back over because the strategy and tactics always intrigue me. We've spoken ad nauseum and the supporters driving home are going to be going mad about the Blitzards. We know that's the obvious one. I said before, you know, easy for me. I would have said Henderson off, give Taylor a job forward just to even bring it to ground, which was the job that was doing, and Blitzards back. The other one that really shocked me that didn't happen, the Tigers got a run on in that third quarter, I beg your pardon. They kicked 5-1. Henderson hadn't worked all night. Unfortunately, I'm not going to refer to him as some of the earlier callers did. He's played 170 games. He's out there trying his bum off. It's not working. The other tactic that was talked about tonight, Neildy, coming in, was isolating Dangerfield inside 50. Paddy Dangerfield is a superstar. He had one kick, Neildy, in the second half after a great first half. He was going out of the game. Is someone in the coach's box saying, Scotty, Dangerfield isolated inside 50. Let's get it in as quick as we can. He beats 9 out of 10, that didn't happen. That's where I get frustrated watching it. Why didn't that happen?
Well, good question. From there, what you need to be aware of is that Richmond is a side, Chuck, the way that they play, they don't allow that to happen. It's not, some teams will allow that to happen by, if they're a high-pressing team, that they'll press all the way up the ground and they'll let someone stay back inside 50. Other teams, not too many, will go one-on-one, and therefore the forwards, that they just caravan you around. Richmond do neither. They would not allow a one-on-one contest with Patrick Dangerfield inside the forward 50. So it's almost a moot point, given that they wouldn't allow that to happen. It's not something with the way that they play their back six. They roam around the ground as a block of six players. They've done it since Dimmer got them rolling about, I know that they had that year where they missed the finals. They've done that for about a decade. It's a really interesting system. You can play Dangerfield as the deepest forward,
and then again, I know you've got to start 6-6-6. As the bounce goes up,
you clear out,
and you have the...
I understand how it works. Thank you for explaining that to me. But what you asked for is why they might not have done it. It's really interesting that if they're getting a run on, they were getting a run on because the footy wasn't in the Geelong forward line. It was in the Richmond one. It's going to be super brave if Richmond are going absolutely berserk. They weren't getting it deep, mate. And if they're going berserk out of the middle to take Dangerfield out of there and put him forward, it would have been a big call.
Inside 50s, 56 to 51.
Go the third quarter inside 50s.
Kelly kicked three goals.
The inside 50s were 19 to 9.
Yeah.
It was 37-19 after half time.
Yeah.
Ended up being 56-51. I mean, I mentioned Richmond only had 19 inside 50s in the first half. They had 19 in the third quarter alone.
Yep.
They absolutely dominated. And I mean, some players just went completely out of the game in that final quarter for the Cats, unfortunately. And some of them were experienced, some of them weren't. I mean, Mark O'Connor was fantastic in the third quarter and trying to keep the Cats in it, and he went completely out of the game in that final term. Narkle went out of the game. Reece Stanley went out of the game in the last quarter. Parfitt hardly had a touch. Cam Guthrie, the man we spoke to, he didn't touch the ball at all in the final term. So just too many players, unfortunately, just found the going too tough and couldn't maintain a four-quarter performance after a really strong first half.
That's an interesting point too there, Ben, because Richmond were 21 points down at half-time, and there weren't many positional moves made. They just got back to doing what they do really well, and the good players played well.
The tap-ons, Neildy, what Cam Guthrie said, that just that faith in each other to be able just to push the ball on. And
that's what they do really well. They were fantastic. And Sean mentioned before the game, particularly in finals, you get 20% of your players are going to do 80% of what you need them to do. And in the first half, Ben was reading out the numbers that, you know, Kelly and Selwood and Dangerfield, and I think Tui was up there. They played really well. The reality is, in the second half,
the
Richmond guns, they stepped up, and the Geelong guns fell away, and there's the game done by whatever it was, 20 points.
Fifth quarter for Signature Homes and City to Surf Solar. We're going to take a break, come back, and wrap things up here from the MCG. Hamlin Hanger, Trevor Holmes, goal of the night as well. We'll look at some key stats. Geelong Insurance Brokers head-to-head. We'll see how that finished up as well. Curse Hire with all the stats, of course. Steamatic standout. And then look ahead to the second of the preliminary finals, Collingwood and the GWS Giants tomorrow from 3 o'clock. So it will be a 4:35 bounce for that one. Thanks to Warralili, our number one ticket holder. Unfortunately, Geelong beaten by 19 points in this preliminary final by Richmond. Live, breathe, Carol Footy.
For Signature Homes and City to Surf Solar, the fifth quarter.